Okay, so introduction into 1 Samuel. So getting us in here. So kind of our 8 weeks will wrap up. My goal is to kind of get through 1 and 2 Samuel. That's the hope, right, is to kind of wrap up the 8 weeks with that. So that's our goal over the next 3 weeks is to finish out 1 and 2 Samuel. All right, so hopefully we can get through that. That's the hope. And so, yeah, we'll get an introduction here. And we'll have another introduction for 2 Samuel probably a little bit, but like there's obviously overlap, okay, with 2 Samuel. So some of the stuff will be applicable for both, okay? So first thing we kind of go through is the title of the book, which once again, we have a book named after one of the main characters, right, of the book, Samuel, obviously the prophet here. But it is interesting that even though he is like a very major character, do you remember what ends up happening to him later on in 1 Samuel? Is he in 2 Samuel?
He dies.
Yeah, he dies, right? Like, he dies partway through. Yeah. And then isn't even, like, really in 2 Samuel, okay? So it's kind of interesting of, oh, how come he, like, got kind of the title here? But... In the Jewish tradition, it's always been referred to as like the Book of Samuel. Okay, so that's how it's always been. And part of why it may like keep the name for both 1 and 2 Samuel is because in like the Jewish canon of how they do the books and all that, these books are actually just one book. Okay, so there's not 1 and 2 Samuel, there's just Samuel. Okay, is kind of the thing. And so that can help explain why Samuel's name is kind of used for both books, because he is a very major part of this and has effect in all this. But it's just like one book. But then you can kind of ask that question of, well, that's kind of interesting. If the Jewish kind of canon viewed this as one book, how did we end up with two? Right? Like, it's kind of a weird thing. How do we now have 1 and 2 Samuel? And that seems to be linked with the Septuagint. That's like the Greek translation of the Old Testament, all that, which divided these books into two. Okay, so they divided into two, and our canon kind of follows that. But speaking of kind of the Septuagint, the Greek version here, it is interesting. If you look at a copy of the Septuagint, you would actually not find a book called Samuel, okay? You would not find a book called Samuel because they actually have a different title for it, for 1 and 2 Samuel. They actually call them 1 and 2 Kings or 1 and 2 Kingdoms. And you're like, wait a second, I thought there already was like a 1 and 2 Kings. And those would actually be 3rd and 4th Kings, okay? Like, or 3rd and 4th Kingdoms is kind of the things. And so, and those titles are actually kind of fitting, right? If you think about it, because really, like, as we'll see in a moment, like, as we get to, like, the theme of 1 Samuel, there really is a focus on kings and kingship, okay? That's what's happening. And so, and when you view, like, these books in this way, it helps us keep in mind that all four of these books really contain one continuous storyline. Okay, they really are containing one continuous storyline, and it helps us to see God's agenda in 1 Samuel all the way through 2 Kings. Okay, this is all about kings. It's all about kingship is really the emphasis here. And so we'll expand upon that in a moment when we get to like the theme and all that. But like really these historical accounts don't just talk about kings. What we're going to see is they also establish a theology of kingship. Okay, a theology of kingship. And we'll expand, like, well, what does that mean? We'll expand that in a moment. But really, God in in history is establishing this theology of kingship. And so that's what you see from 1 Samuel all the way through 2 Kings. That's what is going on here. But even though you can view 1 Samuel through 2 Kings as kind of one storyline or one unit in a sense, they likely had different authors though, okay? And we see that based on their kind of differences in styles and all that. And so speaking of authors, authorship, what would maybe be your first guess of the author of 1 and 2 Samuel?
Samuel.
Yeah, Samuel, right? That's a good guess. But then what do we mention for, like, what's the issue with that? Samuel dies, right? So, well, there's still, like, more after. And actually, like, the Jewish Talmud, like, they agree, like, saying that, yeah, Samuel, they make this quote, says, Samuel wrote the book which bears his name and the book of Judges and Ruth. So there's some support of kind of maybe having Samuel as the author. But like we said, he dies partway through. So like, well, that doesn't seem to fully work. So at best, you could say, well, he wrote like maybe the first part and then someone else kind of finished it. And the Jews were not like oblivious to this issue. So the Talmud also added, because there's like a question of like, well, Samuel died. What do you do with that? And they kind of argue that Gad the seer and Nathan the prophet are the ones who completed the book. Okay. And so that's the Jewish kind of tradition. They view it as Samuel, Gad, and Nathan all kind of wrote parts of this, okay, and completed the book. And some evangelical scholars agree with that tradition, and some even that agree with that point to 1 Chronicles 29:29, which states, now the acts of King David from the first to the last are written in the chronicles of Samuel the seer, and in the chronicles of Nathan the prophet, and in the chronicles of Gad the seer. And so we don't know exactly what those like chronicles that are mentioned there are referring to, but some suggest like, hey, this might be pointing to like 1 and 2 Samuel. Okay? So that's a possible solution. But again, the reality is we don't know for sure. Okay? But the text itself does seem to suggest that maybe this was like an eyewitness of the events, that that's kind of likely, because you see like a lot of attention to detail, such as like details of like specific characters and events. They also focus a lot on like kind of long dialogues and stuff like that. And so this may point to an eyewitness of these events, which again, then could go in line with Samuel, Gad, and Nathan. They would fall in that category. But again, we don't know for sure because scripture doesn't tell us, right? It doesn't, as if like in the letters of Paul, where he makes it easy on us and says, I, Paul, am writing, right? Or you don't have quotes from other passages, like say with like the Torah, where it says, as Moses said in this, right? Like you don't have some of those statements. So, but those are the possibilities, okay? But the date, as I mentioned, like some people suggest maybe like a later date, like during the time of the exile. But if our suggestion that the text seems to point us to an eyewitness of the events, then that would bring it obviously earlier, okay? And so I think that is likely. And so this would place the time of writing close to like the time of David, okay? Whether that's like during his reign or shortly after it, maybe in the reign of Solomon, that seems to work, right? Kind of that's the more fitting kind of date, right? Is something a little bit earlier here. All right. And then historical context. And so just again, we'll point out just a couple of things to keep in mind as we kind of enter the book of 1 Samuel, just to help us out. And really, these two books, right, so 1st, 2nd Samuel, really cover about like 130, 150 years of Israel's history. So this is a good chunk of time, and it covers, right, the time of Samuel through the reign of Saul, through the reign of David, right? That's kind of what we're going to be covering in these two books. And and if you think about it, like 1 Samuel, actually, like the beginning of it takes place during the time of the period of the judges. Okay, so Samuel is technically like the last judge, you could say, right? That's how he's kind of viewed. Okay, Samuel is kind of like this last judge of Israel, and it'll be after him that the nation transitions to the monarchy. Okay, that then you then have a king. And so if you understand that background during the beginning of 1 Samuel is the time of the judges, then you'll understand, again, how dark of a situation Samuel is coming into. That makes sense. And you'll see the need for reform pretty early on in this book. Again, that's where Samuel is coming on the scene here. But then you also, when you realize some of these events are taking place in the time of the judges, you'll be able to make some connections of maybe why certain events are happening. You're like, oh, this might have been caused because this judge did that, right? Like, and so we'll kind of point those out as we come across them, but it gives kind of that helpful background of understanding the first part here is still part of that period of the judges, and then as we're transitioning out to the monarchy. All right, and then another kind of helpful thing, just to, again, help us as we kind of picture all this, is to be reminded a little bit of like the geography of Israel here. Again, we talked about this a long time ago at the beginning of like our Old Testament survey one and all that. But when we're speaking of certain events in Israel, it's helpful to maybe have some framework of what's going on in like kind of the geography of Israel and all that. Because 1 Samuel is kind of largely centered on like just a few parts of Israel here. Okay. And I was going to include a map. I forgot to. So now you get my nice rough sketch on here. So it'll be awesome, I'm sure. So have this nice shape here. Oh gosh, this is already bad. Okay. So you have the Sea of Galilee up here. That's what that is. Oh gosh, I can smell. And you have the Jordan River going down, and that flows into the Dead Sea down here. Okay. And this is kind of that the eastern border of Israel. Then you have, this is like the coastline. Then you have the Mediterranean Sea over here, which is the west. Sorry, I'm blocking for you guys. So that's kind of that shape there. And so you have like this area that's like the coastal plain, which is all like flat and everything. Nice for travel and everything. And if you remember from our talk in Judges, right, Israel failed to conquer this area of the coastal plain. And do you remember who ends up kind of settling there? The Philistines. Okay, so you have the Philistines. They're also kind of here. Let's call them Phil. All right, Philistines. And then from our time of the Judges and all that, we have Israel. They settled a lot kind of in the hill country. Okay, more in the hills of places. And that would run kind of the center of Israel, kind of the middle of everything there. And that's where Israel kind of settled a lot of their places. That's where like Jerusalem and all these other things eventually are. And all that is in this kind of central part running vertically through like the hill country of Israel. But then you also had this area that's like in between the hill country and the coastal plain that contain like these valleys and stuff that would kind of connect the hill country to the coastal plain. I called this Shephelah, kind of fancy name there. The Shephelah. And really, if you have, here I'll kind of put Israel over here. So if you have Israel over here, Philistines over here, the Shephelah kind of acts as what? Yeah, kind of like a buffer zone, right? And it would be kind of, you would expect, the center of a lot of interactions between the two nations, right? Because that's where you kind of meet up, okay? And so that's what we're going to see like in 1 Samuel is a lot of the events are taking place in this area, okay? That's like David and Goliath that's happening in the Elah Valley, which is in the Shephelah. And sometimes, as we'll see, the Philistines do kind of push more into like the hill country and all that, but largely a lot of it is in kind of that Shephelah area, okay? And again, like, you might think, well, that's nice to know, I guess. But like kind of the point, right, is to show, like to talk about geography, right, is it's helpful because it's a reminder for us that these events are grounded in history. Okay, they're grounded in history. They're real events that happen in real places. And speaking of kind of grounding things in history, I should kind of also point out as, again, kind of background historical context, is some people try to make claims that certain individuals that are key individuals in like 1 Samuel didn't actually exist, or like the events in Israel like didn't really happen. And that's why I mentioned like the geography before, because what? The Bible's declaring these are real events that happen in real places, but we also have the support of like historicity because like there's historical people, okay? And so for a while there was this trend in like scholarship and everything, many years ago, a little bit, that question actually like that David was like real, or if he was really like the David we see in the Bible, right? It's like, oh, he was maybe like some small tribal leader, he wasn't like a king that had like a nation, all this stuff, right? And so this really, they called in question, like, whether, one, if he even existed, two, if he did exist, is probably not what, like, the Bible says, right? I think what is cool is you often have, as people make statements like this, sometimes you have archaeology that kind of comes up and supports what we, like, the Bible says, and it's pretty awesome. And so one of these things is known as, like, the Tel Dan Stele. Okay, I can write that. Stelea's like inscription or something, and it's found at like a tell. That's like an excavation place, like of this place of Dan. Okay, so this tell Dan Stele, which you get this reference to, like I think it was like an Aramean king writes this inscription of how he defeated this king. He defeated the king of Israel as well as the king of the house of David. Okay, so this took place in the divided kingdom, as we'll get to later on in Old Testament, when there's the northern kingdom Israel and the southern kingdom Judah. But he describes that king as what? Being a king of the house of David. Okay, and so what we see there is David wasn't just like some small tribal guy as what? He was a king who was also like the main dynasty, to where like a king a little like many years later is being referred to as a king of the house of David. Right, it is the Davidic dynasty, and kind of really supports how the Bible depicts David. Right, not only was he a real person, but he has like a dynasty in his name, and he was significant enough that even kings 100 years later are referred to as being the house of David. Okay, and you also find like there's inscriptions that have been found that like in the Philistine city of Gath that mentions the name Goliath. And we don't know if that's actually a reference to the Goliath we see in 1 Samuel, but it at very least provides like a cultural context that this was a name used in that period, right? There were people called Goliath and all that, okay? And again, pointing to that the Bible is grounding these people and places in history, right? That's kind of the point here. And so, again, the overall significance of all this, of why I talk about like the historicity of like, or why I talk about like the place, all that, because again, if these are real people and these are real events grounded in real historical places, all that, right? Like, if all the events are true, then the theology that these events are teaching is also true, right? Like, you can't divorce like history from like theology, right? Like, that's the connection we need to make, right? And so, if these things actually happen, they are true, then the theological lessons that are being tied with them are also true, right? Like, that's kind of the point here. Okay, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. All that. Okay, so then the theme of the book. So largely that's what we'll wrap up tonight. We can get this done real quick. Okay, so theme of the book, we'll go with this theme of the God who prepares his king. So for 1 Samuel, the God who prepares his king. All right. And so as I mentioned before, that even though 1 Samuel through like 2 Kings, there's a focus on kings and it's really about kings, it's more than that. It's actually establishing, as I mentioned, like this theology of kingship. And so you can ask this question of, first off, like, okay, well, why do we need this theology of kingship? And specifically, why does Israel need this kind of theology of kingship? And so first off, Israel needs it because they need to understand what's going on, right? They need to understand what's going on. They need to understand what it means to be a king. They need to understand what God is doing with the kings and how he's going to interact with them. They need to understand the promises surrounding the kings. And really all of this ties into them understanding who the right king is, like, which is David, right? That's what Samuel is going to establish. And if he is the right king, then what will God kind of be doing with him, right? That's kind of what's unfolding here. So that's the first thing. They understand what's going on. The second aspect is this is going to impact Israel later on in the future, okay? Because if you remember, like if we're talking about like the story of kings from 1 Samuel through 2 Kings, 2 Kings ends with Israel being where? They're in exile. Right? They're in exile. They're away from the land. And they've been conquered, removed from the land. And again, we'll get there eventually and all that. But if you think about it, Israel at that moment is probably thinking what? It's all over, right? Like, God's done with us. Like, we're out here in this foreign land, all this, right? But what really you're going to start to see, and what like this theology of kingship helps them understand, is that this isn't over, right? This isn't over. Like, God has done things and he's going to do certain things still in the future, right? And like, so even though, yes, they have failed because of their sin, they're in exile because of sin, there is still hope that this theology of kingship will overcome sin, right? It's going to overcome that. And this is what these four books are going to show, right? And so it gives hope as well to Israel. So it prepares them. It shows them this is what a king is going to look like. This is what a king needs to be. And then in the future, it's also going to help them to look back and see God isn't done yet, right? God is still moving his plan forward and all that. Okay, so that's kind of why Israel needs that theology of kingship. So let's unpack the theme a little bit more of how 1 Samuel is going to actually contribute to this theology. And really, 1 Samuel, as kind of this first book into this, is going to establish some of these kind of foundational principles of this theology of kingship. And primarily, this preparation as God as king, right? That's really one of the focuses, is God as king. All right, and so let's consider this, like, kind of walk through the book as a whole, in a sense, real quick. And so what you see in 1 Samuel is that through different, like, events and all that that are going to take place, God is going to establish kind of certain precedences. Precedents? I don't know what the plural precedent is. Is it precedences? Precedence? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak. That are going to tell you what a king will be like. Okay, what a king will be like. And so you will need this or that in order to have a king, right? To have a true king, you'll need that. And so the first part of the book will kind of establish two things. First of all, it kind of starts establishing, like if you have on your paper there, you have a little outline of those three parts. So the first part, that preparations for the monarchy, we see kind of starting to establish kind of the basic of what surrounds like a theology of kingship. What does a king need in kind of basic form to do his job? Okay, that's kind of it. As well as showing the reality in the first part of the book that God is the true king. Okay, God is the true king. That's really what they're establishing, that Israel is not a monarchy. They are a theocracy. God is their king. And even, and even if you have a monarchy, which they do eventually, right? Like, they are to have kind of a theocratic monarchy. Why? Because Israel's true king is not a human king. It's a God king, right? That's the emphasis. Okay, and so, and I've heard the distinction, right? So you need the king, like capital K king, right? God, to help sustain and mediate and dictate what the king, lowercase k, does, right? That's what is going on here. And so ultimately this involves like the human king needs to be obedient to the uppercase king, right? God. That's what's being established. And really one scholar kind of put it like you cannot have a theology of kingship without God the Father as high and center of being that king, right? Like he needs to be that king. Ultimately, God the Father is that king. That's the first part of the book, right? Establishing that reality, God is the true king. The second part of the book then builds off of this to show even further what a king will be like. What is a king? And it does this by showing you what a king is not. Okay? So it's kind of that thing of you see what a true king is by them showing you what a true king is not. Okay? It's kind of this contrast or a literary like foil, right? Kind of a thing. And so what you have is a bad example of what a king is to show you what a true king should be. And if you remember from Samuel, who is the bad example? Saul, right? Saul is the bad example. And so from the life of Saul, we're going to see what a king shouldn't be in order to teach us what a king should be, right? Does that make sense? Kind of that, yeah, learn from that. All right, and that's going to point our attention then to the right person for the job, which occurs in the last part of the book of 1 Samuel, which is where you meet David, right? That's where you meet David. And so not only do you see that he's the right guy for the job, that he is the one that God has chosen here with that, but you also see God is going to kind of refine him further to make him even more so the right person for the job. And this refining process will be important because it's going to reveal a lot about this kind of theology of kingship. Again, what it means to be a king and all that. All right, and so this is all important for like the original audience because it's going to prove that the Davidic dynasty is the right dynasty. This is God's choice of the dynasty here. And so it should give people hope and all that. And then for us also, like what this is going to help us do is that It's going to have implications for us because 1 Samuel sets in motion a lot of things that are going to then contribute to our understanding of Christ, right? Of the Messiah, of what the true king will be like. And so you'll have to notice, right? We're going to learn things about kings and kingship. And while there may not be direct like quotes like prophesying about Jesus or predicting him, but what we learn about what characterizes a true king is then going to impact our understanding of Jesus later on. Does that make sense? Okay. And so the hope, right, is that as we understand more of 1 Samuel, then you'll better understand the life of Christ, right? The life of Jesus through that. Okay. So that's kind of the importance for us there. It's going to have ramifications on Christ in the future. All right. So that's our theme. Yeah, they're all kings. And then again, you have the structure of the book there. We're just dividing in those three parts where first 7 chapters, kind of the preparation for the monarchy, kind of preparing the way for that. Chapter 8, we get the institution of the monarchy and the life of Saul, where we get kind of that bad example. And then we have kind of the rise of David there, where the right king is entering the scene there. Okay? And that's our introduction to 1 Samuel. And next week, we will actually get into 1 Samuel. All right, so that's the plan. And we'll try to wrap 1 and 2 Samuel up over the next 3 weeks with that. Okay?